And I want to introduce you to my next special guest. He's calling all the way from Baltimore, Maryland, Dr. Bill Richards. Aloha.
Aloha. It's good to be with you.
It's good to be with you. I'm so excited you called. Dr. Bill Richards is a clinical psychologist, the one who has also graduate degrees in theology from the Yale Divinity School and the Andover Newton Theological School. He's a licensed psychologist in Maryland, and he's also a member of the Department of Psychiatry in the John Hopkins School of Medicine. He's currently working on a cancer study research using the psilocybin with people who have had previous diagnosis of cancer or who have current diagnosis with cancer. So thank you so much, Bill, for taking some time to speak with us here on Kauai.
Well, it's. I wish I could be there in person, but...
Yeah, we could too. That would be awesome. Maybe sometime you can make it out here. So maybe we could talk, first of all, because, I mean, you are a clinical psychologist, but with these degrees in theology, the Yale Divinity School is like, wow. maybe because, you know, it takes the whole psychology thing to, like, more of a spiritual... Maybe you could talk a little bit about combining, you know, spirituality and the whole mystical side of beingness and what's brought you to doing this research with the psilocybin.
Well, I'll do my best. You know, my specialty is the psychology of religion, especially the psychology of religious experience. And so I'm very interested in... where religions come from and what the experiential dimension of religion is for people in many different aspects. And back when I was studying theology in the University of Göttingen in Germany, actually, way back in the early 60s, I happened to become aware and volunteer, actually, for a research project with psilocybin. I don't know if everyone knows what psilocybin is, the so-called ingredient in the sacred mushrooms or magic mushrooms. They're sometimes called that the Indians in Mesoamerica have used in their religious rituals for probably at least 2,000 years. And anyway, I became aware of the potential of this substance wisely used to facilitate very profound states of religiously significant forms of consciousness. And I guess my career has slowly evolved from that point have been applying the use of the drugs like psilocybin for a good part of my life to see if they can help people simply live more fully. Everything from treating addictions and severe forms of psychological distress in the realm of psychotherapy to right now what we're doing is reactivating work I did a few decades ago with cancer patients, seeing if a mystical experience triggered with psilocybin can help people live more fully and with less anxiety and depression and just enjoy whatever time is left, whether they're terminal or not.
So if you just tune in, I have special guest Dr. Bill Richards. He's calling all the way from Baltimore, Maryland. He is working with the research team at the John Hopkins Medical Center, or Medical University, and they are currently working with cancer patients or people who were previously diagnosed with cancer, particularly ones who are having some anxiety around cancer and maybe even just a little bit of apathy towards life. So maybe you could talk a little bit about, because in case there's someone listening who'd be interested in participating in this research, maybe you could talk a little bit about what's the steps to take to be a part of the research?
Well, the step to take, first one might want to go to our website, which is just www.cancer-insight.org. And there's lots of information there. But basically, one would call Mary Casamano, our research coordinator, 410-550-5990, and she would take it from there. The participation in the research project does involve a fair commitment of time, and for people out of town, certainly some resources for accommodations in Baltimore. But we provide thorough medical screening and then at least 8 hours of preparation of kind of establishing a bond of trust and getting to know the person so that they can be really comfortable during the period of psilocybin action. And then there are two full days, 1 month apart, where the research volunteer receives psilocybin, which lasts about 6 hours, and they receive very careful guidance, and we have a real art of running psilocybin sessions that has been developed over the years using music and in a very comfortable kind of living room type of environment. No white coats and stethoscopes are usually in the room. It does not feel like what people think of, good grief, research at Hopkins. It sounds kind of scary.
Mm-hmm.
but it's really a very warm, humane environment. So people have their experiences and then fill out questionnaires for us and write a report, and then we help them integrate whatever insights occurred. And then, as I mentioned, we repeat that again about a month later. So that's the research involvement, but it's I may be terribly biased because I've done this over the years, but I think it's a wonderful opportunity. There are many people with cancer who suffer from a mild depression and anxiety, and often people kind of ignore it, and they think, well, of course they're depressed, they have cancer, you know. So people are kind of not living as fully as they could. And the psilocybin can also trigger very meaningful religiously oriented states that helps provide meaning and helps people wrestle with those deep existential questions of what does life really mean for me? And it's a real privilege to be doing this research again.
So how long have, now when did Johns Hopkins give the okay for this? Was this something that, I'm just curious. So,
sure.
Because it seems kind of a far stretch for Johns Hopkins, but maybe not, I don't know.
Well, we are a very conservative community, but also a very courageous and visionary community, I think.
Well, thank goodness you need that in medicine.
And there's all kinds of research going on at Johns Hopkins, as you can imagine. But we started around 2000, just very quietly. The initial research was not with cancer patients. It was with normal, healthy volunteers. And we designed a very cleverly organized study to demonstrate the uniqueness of psilocybin, that these deep spiritual experiences weren't simply due to suggestion or wishful thinking, but that there really was something sacred about this molecule we call psilocybin. And we wrote a research design, submitted it to the FDA, and were approved. and then submitted it through the Johns Hopkins Human Subjects Review Board and so on, and received approval. So we began that work at first very quietly, and completed that study about 2 years ago. It was published in a journal called Psychopharmacology, and was very positively received in the research community. And then we just published a 2-year follow-up, or 14-month follow-up, actually, on those initial volunteers, one-third of whom claimed it was the most significant experience of their lifetimes, and two-thirds claimed it was among the 5 most significant experiences of their lifetimes, right up there with the birth of a child or death of a parent, which was pretty impressive.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah, so then we decided to, the next step was to do a study with people who have a diagnosis of cancer, who might especially benefit from the experiences that can occur. I want to stress that it's not all necessarily pleasure, as in any deep spiritual experience. Sometimes it also entails going, sorting through some personal material of whatever it is for the person, grief or guilt or whatever. You know, the in classical mysticism, there's always the purgation phase of the mystical journey. It's not just having the enlightenment at the top of the tunnel or at the top of the mountain, but it's the difficult journey up the mountain, and a session can include both. But when people look back on whatever happens, just about everyone has found it profoundly meaningful and valuable.
Now, if you just tuned in, I have special guest Dr. Bill Richards. He's calling from Baltimore, Maryland. He is working in research with cancer patients at the Johns Hopkins School of Medicine in Baltimore. He is a clinical psychologist, also has graduate degrees in theology from the Yale Divinity School and the Andover Newton Theological School. He's a licensed clinical, a licensed psychologist in Maryland right now. And so how long has it been that you've been working specifically with people who are either survivors of cancer or who currently are diagnosed with cancer?
Well, this present study is just getting launched.
Oh, super.
And we have openings for about 43 more volunteers. But earlier, this was not at Hopkins, though it was also in Baltimore, at the Maryland Psychiatric Research Center in collaboration with Sinai Hospital here in Baltimore back in the 60s and early 70s, about 100 cancer patients participated in very similar research. So the research itself isn't new. We like to think we're doing it better than ever now, but it's a wonderful opportunity.
Well, you said your first introduction to psilocybin was, I believe, in the 60s.
That's right.
So we're talking, 40 years here. I mean, in your personal experience of, working with people with psilocybin, have you seen any type of evolution, just in human beings alone, their experiences with psilocybin?
Well, I see the same range of experiences. There's no such thing as kind of the psilocybin experience.
Right, but I mean...
people take the drug and have a certain experience, and they right. think that's what psilocybin does.
Right, well, it does for them.
Right. But the experiences aren't in the drug, they're within us.
Exactly. Well, I guess that's why my point is, do you think, the evolution of human beings, do you see much difference between now and 40 years ago as far as, openness or, I don't know exactly what term I'm looking for, but you know what I mean?
I think people are more wary now than they were back then, because the drugs have been outlawed by the FDA, and research has essentially stopped for 25, 30 years, and was slowing down before that. So it's the people who have taken the drugs illegally and often done it unwisely and gotten into trouble who have kind of created the publicity. And the people who back in the good old days were able to take it legally and responsibly, people like Houston Smith and Aldous Huxley and Alan Watts, these people are almost forgotten. And so the image of so-called psychedelic drugs or entheogens has come to, in the popular man, has come to be kind of disturbed teenagers doing crazy things. And the real serious potential of these drugs is far beyond that. And that's what we're hoping to recapture and seriously continue to study.
So if you just tuned in, I have Dr. Bill Richards with me, joining me from Baltimore, Maryland, from the Johns Hopkins School of Medicine. He's currently working on research there using psilocybin with cancer patients. And there's more information about this study, excuse me, and that is on their website, which is www.cancer-insight.org. And we also have a link on our website if you can't remember that, you're driving. And if you go to kkcr.org, there is a link to Dr. Bill Richards' website. Well, it's not really his website, but he's...
Right.
Yeah, maybe we could talk... Now, how many people are actually working with you?
Is this we have a project? Wonderful team of Roland Griffiths, Matt Johnson, Mary Casamano, my son Brian Richards, and a number of postdoctoral students who work with us as they're able to. So it's a real privilege to be doing this research.
And also, if you wanted to speak with someone personally, as opposed to going to the website, you can phone Mary at 410-550-5990. And also, you know, I've been telling some friends of mine about your program since I found out about it. And just because, I mean, I know as we had kind of talked about in email, well, it's a long way for people from Hawaii, but so many people who live here in Hawaii have friends and family, you know, in the mainland and even on the East Coast. So, you know, I think it's still good to just get the word out there, because, and then this is a very popular tourist destination, so people come here from all around the world. And I was just so delighted that you were doing this research, because, you know, I also believe that, you know, that the mind can be opened, you know, in various ways. I mean, meditation's one, but, you know, some people can't really get there through meditation alone.
Mm-hmm.
And so the psilocybin can really help to bring you to a place of wherever you need to be, really. I mean, that's what, when you're talking about how sometimes, you know, it might not be the most pleasant experience. I don't know, it seems like you're sort of given what you need for your healing.
That's right. There seems to be an incredible wisdom within each person's mind. And the psilocybin in a trust-filled environment kind of opens the door and gives an opportunity to explore, especially if the dosage is adequate. And then what comes to the person's awareness is usually exactly what the person feels they needed. You know, it's a wonderful, meaningful process of unfolding that happens during the period of drug action. It's really not random at all, and it's often like uniquely designed by the person's own psyche, is the feeling I've come to have.
So maybe you could talk a little bit about, you know, the definition of the so-called mystical consciousness, you know, from the perspective of being, you know, a psychologist of religious experience.
No, I would love to. We do have two more hours, right? So, but briefly, there are visionary states where people will sometimes encounter visions of the Christ or bodhisattvas or Greek gods or precious stones, that type of deeply symbolic and profoundly meaningful imagery. But there's also a state in and kind of beyond that where there's more of a unitive consciousness, and it's felt to be kind of beyond time and space and incredibly real. And as William James stressed in The Varieties of Religious Experience, there's also intuitive knowledge. It's not just feeling, but there's knowledge. And part of the knowledge that is usually reported by people who have these deep, deep experiences is kind of the reality of, you know, God or whatever your favorite noun is for that ultimate source of being, a feeling of the brotherhood of man, that somehow we are all interconnected within consciousness. And especially for cancer patients, there's often a conviction, intuitively attained, that somehow what the mystery of what we are, whatever this stuff is that we call consciousness, that somehow that really is indestructible. And that in spite of the reality of death and illness and struggle, that somehow in the big picture all is well. And that awareness seems to help people to live the time that's left, and hopefully it can be years as well as months, but whatever is left is just lived with more kind of serenity, maybe more playfulness, deeper interpersonal relationships, and
that's more peace, maybe. More
yeah,
peace.
Inner kind of inner peace. Mm-hmm. It's not a substitute for a spiritual life, but it certainly is a catalyst of the spiritual life, mm-hmm. in whatever form is right for the particular person.
And now, do you think, you were talking about consciousness, do you think that sometimes during these psilocybin experiences that people tap into even maybe the collective consciousness?
Yes, very much so.
Maybe you could just
what the Hindus call the web of Indra, or so this very deep sense of awareness that seems to include everyone and even all reality in some sense.
And now, for those who are listening, just not that you necessarily have to share any of your personal experiences with psilocybin, but if you feel like, since you've devoted quite a bit of your life to, researching the effects and the benefits of psilocybin, did you personally have something that was very profound happen that made you want to research this more in a clinical setting?
Well, yes, and fortunately I can talk about it because I did it legally.
Okay. I guess that means I can't talk about it.
When the drug was still legal, and it was within a university research department at all, so I came by it honestly, but yes, I did have a very profound experience that certainly catalyzed my interest and my just profound respect for the mystery of the mind and the mystery of this unique molecule we call psilocybin. And I can really appreciate how the Indians who use this in their ceremonies view it as sacred as the plant, they would say the plant is very wise and the plant speaks to you and so on. But we aren't used to having mushrooms talk to us, you know. It's
unless you're on them.
Kind of hard to understand. But there is something incredibly profound when the psilocybin molecule becomes active in the human brain. And actually, we have very similar chemicals that are naturally produced in the brain. You know, a dimethyltryptamine, which is a powerful, short-acting substance, is naturally produced in our brains and may be part of spontaneous mystical experiences when they occur. There's so much we don't know yet scientifically, and it's... But it's a frontier where science and religion have to work together and enjoy working together, I think, in a very mutually respective and collaborative way.
Well, I'm just grateful that you are one of those people doing, you know, bringing this to the world of research. Because I do believe that it can be very beneficial. Using psilocybin, especially as you said, in a very controlled and nurturing, safe space, which is a huge part of your research.
I mean, that's right. We would not want to encourage anyone to take the drug outside of a research context, you know, because there certainly are people who should not take it, you know?
Right, yes.
And there are ways of taking it that are very risky. But if the drug is taken in it by the right persons in a responsibly structured manner, it's remarkably safe. The drugs are not addictive, and there's no physical toxicity of them that we know of, and they have been around for a couple thousand years or more.
Yep. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Richards. If you just tuned in, Dr. Bill Richards has been spent the last 30 minutes with us talking about a number of things, but he is a psychologist, and he is also working with a research group at the Johns Hopkins School of Medicine using psilocybin with cancer patients, people who have been previously diagnosed with cancer or currently diagnosed with cancer. They have openings for about 43 more volunteers. This is a volunteer program. I mean, you volunteer to participate. And how long, so what time frame are we talking about? Is this going to be going on for like 1 year, 6 months?
Well, it'll go on until it's complete, but it'll probably be at least a year.
At least a year. Well, if you'd be into it, I would love for you, after in the conclusion of your study, if you could contact me again, if you'd be willing to share some of the research that you found out, some of the things, would you be willing? Can you do that kind of a thing?
Sure. Well, we can stay in touch.
That'd be awesome. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Richards.
Oh, thank you, and best wishes to everyone out there in Radio Land.
Yeah, and also, if you'd like more information, you can visit the website. That's www.cancer-insight.org. And you can phone Mary directly if you'd like to find out more about the volunteers for research with a cancer diagnosis. And Mary's number is 410-550-5990. The study is being done at the Johns Hopkins School of Medicine, located in Baltimore, Maryland. And also, if you can't remember all that, if you go to kkcr.org, currently we have a link to the website of the cancerinsight.org. So thank you so much, Dr. Richards.
Great. Thank you, Tracy.
Aloha.
Aloha.